Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat. I'm Allison Klein. We're back live from the Intel Developer Forum in San Francisco. And I'm very honored to have Alex Williams, one of the leading cloud bloggers in the world, on the program today. Welcome, Alex.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I was pretty excited when I saw this come up as a concept for an episode because it really offers me an opportunity to change focus and turn the tables on you and ask questions about cloud. I guess we'll start with just a very simple question, which is we've seen the evolution of cloud over the last few years. Where do you characterize the cloud arena today? And, you've been at VMworld recently. What is the cusp of where the industry is focused today and where are customers focused today?
I think there's definitely a number of camps who will define the cloud differently and define how we're where we are in the market right now. There's one camp that really believes cloud is defined as a web-oriented framework, that commodity servers in a multi-tenant environment, maybe not even have any virtualization on them, and they just process pictures, they process data just very efficiently. You'll see that, that's the approach I think that you see with folks like cloud scaling,
mm-hmm.
Randy Bias, he's a real proponent of that. And, I think that also kind of falls in line with what Amazon Web Services is doing, right? Building a commodity stack and differentiating with applications on top.
It's almost a warehousing approach.
Yeah.
Warehouse scale computing, I guess, would be the right term.
Yeah, well, I think their facilities are the size of warehouses,
mm-hmm.
for sure. So, yeah. And then I think if you look at Google, that's a similar analogy there, where Google essentially developed, this pizza box, essentially, which is they've just really kind of understood that configuring servers inside a cage and doing it efficiently and then adding software on top to provide that secret sauce really, is their way of providing the best efficiencies for delivering, hyperlinked data to people on the web. There's another camp, I think, that you'll see who are more, believe it's more of like about managed service providers who are more invested in,
for instance, virtualization.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, look to companies like VMware. And I think VMware probably is a leader in this area in starting in developing this infrastructure, providing this managed level services that provide the capability for companies to have a much higher degree, I think, of just hand-holding,
mm-hmm.
and helping them move applications online or to the cloud so people can use them anytime, anywhere.
Where does the enterprise fit in that analogy? You talked about the traditional cloud providers like an Amazon or a Google. You talked about managed service providers providing, more of a, if you want to think about it, an elegant solution utilizing virtualization and maybe delivering some differentiation in terms of the services that they can offer. When you talk to an enterprise and their use of cloud inside the organization, how does the definition differ?
Well, I believe that what you're seeing in the market right now is just trying to understand, what it actually means. And I think a lot of it comes down to your own budget and what is the culture inside your company around issues such as security and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
The one way to look at it is that Amazon Web Services provides this ability to launch applications very quickly and be able to then, use those applications for any, for any multiple purposes. That's also, that framework is a lot less expensive too. I mean, you can do it a lot cheaper. You can have a cloud environment for a lot less money using a service like Amazon. For the enterprise, for the more traditional enterprise company, they are looking for they are looking for more managed services. And I again believe it's that services environment that they're really thinking about where they go with the cloud, because they need that guidance too. And they have a lot deeper complexities around compliance and security. And it's a question of whether, you know, those types of topics are getting in the way of their own innovation. But, you know, overall, they want a sense of comfort. You're seeing what's happening for it right now is, like, you know, more than 50% of the enterprise is virtualized right now. Now we're going into that second 50%. And those are the critical applications. So now we have a lot of issues around, you know, these monster virtual machines, right? So how do you, like, take those critical applications and do you move them to the cloud? I think those are the critical, that's a critical kind of topic that enterprises are really trying to grok right now, really trying to understand.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to switch focuses in a second, but I want to remind the members of our live audience, they can send in questions on Blog Talk Radio or via Twitter at Intel Chip Chat. So please do send the questions for Alex and we'll get them on the air. You write for a publication as of this summer called SiliconANGLE, and we're at the Intel Developer Forum, right, which is, you know, has a bit of relevance to Silicon.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the SiliconANGLE for cloud, and why is the microprocessor relevant when we look at these abstracted cloud services?
It's, you know, our angle on it, and particularly I manage a blog called Services Angle, and that's brand new. And Services Angle, I think, is a good way to, you know, it's our way of looking at the cloud. So we believe that there's been traditional services providers who've been offering customized solutions for IT for many, many years. There's this other camp, the service providers who are very efficient, right? Again, the Googles of the world, who provide lightning speed and able to, like, launch applications very quickly. And they're out there, you know, they're a different kind of a service provider.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is the traditional services providers are trying to be more like the modern service providers. So we're starting to see, for instance, companies like, Tata, right? Mm-hmm. They are, you know, they're building data centers all over the world. We see CSC, they're building data centers all over the world. They're offering services. Tata's really going after the small business market. CSC is, I think, going for a more kind of higher end customer.
Sure.
Now, how does a microprocessor play in that? I think that's a really kind of interesting question right now. So what we're seeing, some of the big issues out there is, like, those data centers are getting pretty hot. You know, And so really, there's a lot of innovations around trying to make things more efficient so they don't consume nearly as much energy as they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the processor plays a critical role in that. But the processor also plays a critical role in, for instance, you know, the whole issue about parallel computing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's causing considerable disruptions right now. I mean, if you look at, for instance, SQL, right, and how it's been the dominant, you know, method for managing databases for 10, 20 years, right?
Right.
But those initial technologies were developed, you know, around single core processors. Now we're in the world of multi-core processors. Now you're seeing things like NoSQL come into play.
Mm-hmm.
There's memory, you know, you have these multi-core processors, memory is fully available. And so they're able to really leverage that and provide, you know, this very kind of robust, database layer for all those application developers out there.
So you brought up a ton of topics with that answer. So let's start with efficiency. Facebook a few months ago decided to open up their data center specifications for efficiency. Interesting move on their part to share the technologies that they've been innovating on around energy efficiency, both at the server and storage level and at the data center level. Do you expect, when you look at efficiency trends and some of the challenges in building the architecture for cloud computing, that we're going to enter in a world of more technology sharing like that? And, you know, what did you think about that move when Facebook did that?
The Facebook move was an interesting one. And I think it you know, I think it's interesting if you can contrast it, you know, to one of Facebook's biggest competitors, and that's Google. And if you look at Google, they've been building data centers, you know, for a number of years. They realized early on that they had to do that. If they really wanted to have those efficiencies, they had to be very customized. They had to really customize those commodity servers as best they possibly could. The software engineers are continually trying to make that more and more efficient. But they have problems. They've been having problems with the heat and the power consumption. And a lot of it comes down to, for instance, like the fan size, right? These little things. And so, I think Google's biggest, potential problem is meltdown. I mean, if it gets hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter in these things, I mean, how many more data centers are you going to have to build out? Or how are you going to have to totally replace that infrastructure? So the Facebook story then gets pretty interesting because they designed their own fans, right? They designed their own cooling system. You know, they're using, what a friend of mine and analyst, Tom Rafferty, describes as realization, no virtualization. It's just, again, it's just like data, right? You know, you're like, they got to process millions of pictures, millions of videos, updates. That data needs to just go in, be processed very quickly, and go back out.
Right.
So it's just nodes, just like building nodes, And so if one node goes down, no big deal. Now, if you have virtualization layer in there, then it gets a little bit more complicated, right? So it's not really as good for that kind of, that kind of world. Virtualization, again, would be better for an enterprise where you have critical applications that are required to be managed.
You're talking about almost like a cash and deliver model versus a, some hardcore analysis or processing model, on the other hand, from a standpoint of a managed service provider or offering or even an enterprise, data center that has multiple applications running. Do you see those worlds colliding at any point?
Well, I think they will collide. I think VMware would argue that they believe that they're probably better suited for hosting applications than anyone, right? They believe that they can provide a superior level of service. I think that's a question. I think that, we also need to think about OpenStack. Mm-hmm. And, where OpenStack is right now. And I think it's like, again, it's going to be a question about, what kind of federated cloud infrastructure will each of these parties develop? So what kind of federated infrastructure can VMware develop through its partnerships with service providers? What kind of open network can OpenStack develop with its service providers?
Mm-hmm.
OpenStack, though, I think is still really quite young, and I think that they are having some growing pains right now. I think it's difficult to manage multiple service providers as they're trying to do, and to provide something that's production ready, just something to get something out there. Now there have been projects that have been built on top of OpenStack, right? But it's still quite nascent, and it's going to need a lot of work.
You mentioned OpenStack. We talked about open hardware specifications from the Open Compute Project. You mentioned federated data centers. Why is open industry standard solutions more important, or would you agree with the statement that it's more important than ever when we look at federated cloud solutions? And how is the industry doing beyond that and beyond these open source efforts and delivering those types of capabilities?
I think there's an issue with enterprise right now is how much lock-in, will they have, how much will they be locked into a service provider if they use one? If they go to the cloud. And I think that's been a big issue. And what we've seen is like some efforts to try to like correct that. And I think there's analogies, for instance, when the telcos opened up and provided, each one said, we're not going to have our own SMS service. Everyone will, we'll just have this kind of standard and we'll operate according to that. And SMS went, through the roof. I think that's an issue in play here.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at cloud, you'll see that, a lot of the uses are for test and development. We need to get beyond that.
All right. Well, I have way more questions for you on open source. We're going to take a break for a second. For those who are online, please send us your questions and we'll get them answered in the second half of the episode. And we'll be right back. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more of Allison's interview. Have a question? Visit us at twitter.com/IntelChipChat. We'll be answering questions live next.
And we're back live from IDF. We're with Alex Williams, editor of SiliconANGLE. We were just discussing the concept of open within the cloud. I'm going to transition to something else, though, and this was a question that came in from the audience. There's been a lot of talk about big data. You wrote about it in a column leading up to VMworld and pointed at that as something that's a macro trend to be watching in the cloud space. You know, you talked about at the beginning of the episode some focus on, you know, some of the applications that have been a primary focus of early cloud implementations. How does big data transform things, and where is all this data coming from that will be manipulated within the cloud?
Well, the data is coming from any number of sources. For instance, in healthcare, records are getting digitized, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we have just a flood of data that's coming in that way. Obviously, you know, people are using mobile devices and using them in a way that we never expected. Lots of pictures, you know, lots of updates, lots of text messages, more and more video. So that data is just going to continue to scale. We have all the social, you know, data that's out there. Plus, we have transactional data. There's all kinds of data now. And what that is doing, it's affecting the enterprise in a pretty major way. They are trying to figure out how to manage all that information. How do they innovate on top of that information? So what we're seeing out of that is a deeper interest in things like NoSQL, like Hadoop.
Sure.
And Hadoop has really become quite popular as a way to manage data. And again, I think it goes to what we're talking about before, and it's kind of like that horizontal, you know, developing a horizontal infrastructure that's distributing that data across a multi-tenant environment.
Sure.
That is, I think, what's really, you know, affecting enterprises most deeply right now is that data and how to manage it, and they're starting to figure it out.
You know, if you look at data analysis, you know, the traditional applications have been business intelligence used by largest enterprise environments, really not accessed by small business or even medium business in a lot of cases. But in the cloud, you have an opportunity to extend the ability to do some analytics and drive some insights. But there's a challenge with latency and coherency across data sets.
Big time.
What do you see is the approach? You mentioned Hadoop. How are people dealing with this within the data center, and where's the performance limitation today?
There's a major storage issue, and traditional storage is starting to falter to some extent. And in that inflection point that we're seeing right now, we're seeing a lot of young startups emerging that are providing, you know, very interesting solutions around SSDs, flash memory storage. You have companies such as Pure Storage, it just launched, Tintree, we have Fusion.io. All these companies, according to some VCs we interviewed at VMworld, across the spectrum of startups, could be billion-dollar companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says right there how acute the issue is, for instance, with performance. Because if you, for instance, have virtualized your infrastructure, what often happens, it happens piecemeal. So a company will do a little part of, well, they'll try it out, and it'll be so effective that they'll just then scale it. Now they've got a huge problem because they didn't really anticipate, you know, the load that these virtual machines would have.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates storage, so they start buying more storage and more storage and more storage and more storage. Fusion.io is one of those companies that's really interesting because, you know, if you look at their history, and I did a story about this, you know, looking at Steve Jobs and his time at Apple and what differentiated, you know, Apple. Steve Wozniak is a chief scientist for Fusion.io, and the reason he came there, he's like, well, what you guys have done is you guys have eliminated the middle. You've eliminated a lot of those hardware components.
Mm-hmm.
That allows the software then to have a much bigger role. The software now can control, can almost, you know, be that controlling feature that you can like tune up or tune down. And those are the kind of innovations that enterprises will increasingly need.
I was in Asia a couple months ago, and I was really surprised by the focus on networking and latency when it comes to network and delivering data to the user. Obviously, that's a challenge as we grow the types of rich data streams that we'll be delivering, plus the number of devices that are spread around the world. Where do you see the networking development going, and what would be the thing that you're looking at from a standards perspective to drive or make this a better solution?
I think you're seeing some young players out there who are helping develop networking infrastructures for multi-tenant environments. I think of Arista in particular, and they were involved in helping rebuild KT, Korea Telecom. Mm-hmm. And Korea Telecom is a very interesting story about how a telecommunications company essentially kind of rebuilt their infrastructure.
Right.
And they did it by, using this model of an open infrastructure where they, where the network, is almost like a fabric, right? And that fabric then allows you to work with these multiple endpoints that can just kind of scale up and down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I don't know what standards there will come out of that, but that really is a direction. I think it's going to be, again, evolving around, the issues related to big data and trying to kind of like be able to always have access to that data in some way that the network, can support. I think Arista is a good example of a company that's starting to leverage that. And KT, if you look at the company, what they've done is their whole idea was to build a infrastructure for entrepreneurs, for developers who could use the KT infrastructure, just as a developer, here in San Francisco might use AWS.
Sure. Right?
And so that is an ecosystem question. It's peripheral to networking, but I think it goes into, it has a play in this whole discussion.
I can't believe we've gotten 25 minutes into an episode without bringing up security, so I'll bring it up.
Sure.
We all know about the outages with various cloud providers earlier in the year. How do you balance, and this question came from the audience, how do you balance delivery of service and control with the ability to scale and access computing through the cloud?
Well, I think it depends on, how is security defined on premise, and how have companies traditionally been, defining their security measures.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them really didn't do a very good job of it. And they've suffered as a result. What we're seeing, I think, again, is like this transformation with the cloud is like, I don't think it's a strict choice of what you use. But from what we see, it's again looking at the data, looking at the abnormalities in the data and being able to detect what the spikes are and what those spikes represent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a shift in thinking. I think it's a shift from a thinking in, thinking about being device centric, with security versus thinking more data centric. The PC era was came about because IBM got disrupted, because anyone could build a PC, right? The software age came, and it ushered in a whole new level of innovation. And I think those security companies came out of that software, that software innovation cycle. Now we're coming into this age of data, and we need ways to look at the data. We need to be able to visualize the data and be able to understand the data in a much more simple way than we can now.
Well, and that leads me to my last question, and I can't believe we only had 30 minutes for this interview, because I could talk to you for another hour, I think. You talk about transformation, and obviously this changes the way we manage our IT as well. So what is the shift from a sociological perspective for IT in looking at how they manage their data, and also what does an IT professional look like in 5 years?
It's a good question. I was talking about this last night, and I think there's a story to do where you ask the question, are you old school or new school?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you put two people next to each other, the old school person versus the new school person, you would see some stark differences. The old school person, I believe, grew up in the age of customization. You needed to do customization for you to do what you wanted inside your enterprise. In the new school world, it's very flexible. You can build a new app for that, right? You mm-hmm. can do things very, you're supposed to do things very quickly, be very innovative. The new school person, I think, is more developer-centric, but also operation-centric. So the new school, I believe, represents kind of that molding almost of like the developer and the operations person. So in the old school, I think it's still like, you know, well, how are we gonna update to the new, you know, to the new Oracle infrastructure or you know, how are we gonna continue to customize this ERP application, you know? And I think that's kind of that's a real split there. And people are still trying to figure it out. And I think this is why these issues about paranoia, about security come up. You know, the conversation has to shift to innovation.
Right.
And if we don't shift the conversation to innovation, we're going to get stuck. You know, everyone's going to get stuck. You know, it's an issue across not just business, but society.
Sure. Well, Alex, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. If any of the listeners want to continue the conversation online, where can they find you?
On Twitter, Alex Williams. That's a great place to reach me. And I'll give you my email address, alexhwilliams@gmail.com. On Services Angle, you can read my blog posts, and that's servicesangle.com. And please come and check us out the next time we do our live coverage with theCUBE, and we'll be coming up to some new events this fall and winter.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for being on the program, and enjoy your week at IDF.
Thank you very much, Allison. Thank you for having me.